It's just a tremendous thing. It's sad to some degree that a lot of gospel meetings are kind of going by the wayside, or maybe we just call them different things, or they look like different things, and maybe schedule different things. But it is a tremendous blessing anytime, and I hope that you feel this way. I know that it varies, right, depending on how tired you are and what all you got going on in your life, that sometimes it feels like you kind of drag yourself to the door. And if you're like me, that happens sometimes. But every time I leave, I'm always like, man, I'm glad that I made the effort to be there, to go and do that, to go through what it took and kind of give myself a pep talk. And as a guy who works at a school, then is going to be coaching in the afternoon at the same school, and then also worships and does Bible study at the same school, sometimes that can get a little overwhelming. I've been there so long now, I've kind of worked through that, and I've got to the point where it's like it's not such a big deal. It's actually very comfortable there. But we're thankful that you're here for whatever reason that you're here. We're happy that you're here. We certainly want to present the truth this evening. And what we're going to be talking about is a very personal decision that each one of us has to make, and that is the fact that what is going to cost us our life? We all know that if the Lord does not return, that we all have what I'll call an expiration date. We are going to die. We will not live forever. It is coming for everyone, despite your ideology or your theology or whatever ology that you've got going on. There's going to be a day where everything else will not matter, because it will be your last day on this earth. And the things that you've done, the decisions that you've made, will all have an effect on that day. I can't imagine how difficult it must be, either for people who outlive much of their loved ones, how difficult it is to keep on living sometimes. I remember being when I was taking my leukemia treatments, and you could tell, right, kind of as people walked in, where their mindset was. You know, I was my late 30s. I had two kids at home. I'm married. I had a lot to fight for, right? There was a lot on the line. Like, I will be at these treatments. I'm going to do everything the doctor tells me. I'm going to do everything the nurse tells me, because I've got a tremendous amount to live for in this life. And of course, there were older people who came in, and maybe they sat there by themselves all the time. And maybe they weren't so gung-ho about fighting to continue their living. Maybe they had several bouts with cancer, and maybe they were just ready to go. And maybe they weren't obstinate, but there certainly were some that were in there, like, I'm going to live how I want to live, and no one's going to tell me how I'm going to live out my last days. And certainly this is not me judging them. It's just different places in life, and those people are in a different place than me. But it is an interesting thing, and it is easily revealed. You can go home tonight, probably on your phone right now. You probably have a banking app, and you can pull out your phone and look at your bank account, and you can pretty quickly determine what's important to you, right? Yes, there'll be bills and things that all of us have, but then there's a differentiation, right? There's what I spend my money on, having a good time, or in my case, I collect sports memorabilia, and sometimes I'm like, I hope Whitney doesn't look before I can replenish some of that, right? Might be in trouble. But you can tell pretty quickly. You can also look at your schedule every day, right? Like, these are the things that are important to me. I can remember when I was coaching the first time around, and I went to leave my house, and my son goes, hey, Dad, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to coach football. And he goes, oh, man, it hurt me, right? And at that moment, I kind of had this flash through my priorities, and I go, you know, it's okay that my kids know that I love football, but if they think that's the love of my life, I have messed up royally, like really bad. Like, I've given them the wrong impression in my life. And so it's the time, it's how we spend our money, it's things like that that really reveal what is important to us, and certainly what we are willing to die for should be and would reveal what's important to us. So this idea of discipleship in Christianity, Jesus tells us pretty plainly that we've got to be willing to give everything that we have, including our life. We call ourselves Christians, which means to be like Christ, Christ followers, to be like him. And if he went to the cross and gave his life for people who may or may not ever name him as their Savior, then we must be willing to do the same. And at the very least, we can sacrifice some of our comfort zone, right? And we all have them. We all have things that we've, as I told about last night, we all have things that we've done forever, and we do them, and that's how we do them. And sometimes we have good justification for why we do them. Sometimes we don't, right? I've been in many elders meetings where it was like, well, grandma and grandpa always did it that way, and so we have to continue to do it that way. And maybe it wasn't in that those words, but you get the point. I think we've all seen that before, and not necessarily that it's wrong that grandma and grandpa did it, but that's not necessarily the authority that we're necessarily looking for when it comes to especially what we're supposed to be about in the church, lost souls. And it should be a lot easier than it is, because if we keep in the forefront of our mind that I too at one time was outside of Christ and lost and a sinner, and still to this day there are times that things come up in my life and I don't know what to do, and I don't know which way's up and down, and I make poor decisions, and maybe immediately within 10 seconds, oh, I wish I had not done that or said it that way. And because of our relationship with Jesus, we can just turn to Him and entrust Him and ask Him for wisdom the next time we're making decisions. And so as we get ready to look at this scripture here, we're going to start in Matthew chapter 16, and we'll go to John. We haven't spent a lot of time in John in our time together this week, but we'll get there. Especially, I think it's interesting in John, the personal side of that gospel. In Matthew, one of the main goals of Matthew is to convert Jewish people to the idea that Jesus is this Messiah that they're looking for. And so you're going to see a heavy amount of Old Testament quotes, either from the Torah, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, or the prophets, Isaiah. There's going to be a lot of those. It's going to be very heavy. And so the Jewish person can read Matthew and connect the dots and come to the conclusion at the end, this is the Messiah. This is the lineage of King David. And they're going to make that connection. Last night we were in Luke, and it's written to most excellent Theophilus. Some of the most difficult Greek that you can translate is found in Luke. We believe Luke to be a physician, a very educated person, reaching out to another educated person and trying to convert them to Christianity, or at least encourage them in their Christian walk. And as we get into Matthew, that's something to keep in mind. When we get to John, it's very personal. You see these individual one-on-one moments with Jesus and the different ways in which he approached each individual. I love John because as a church, many times we don't approach individuals in their individual circumstances. We want a very broad brush that works in every circumstance, and it's a process, and it's a system, and it's going to work. And there are certainly things like that that do, in fact, work, right? I think of many evangelistic efforts that work that way. But a lot of times, we miss the personal individual stepping into someone's circumstance because that's scary, is it not? Like, that's, what if I get into this and I don't know what to say, right? I've had many members at our church go, I don't have a way with words like you do. And I'm like, ooh, I don't really have a way of words. You know, I'm a very redneck plain. Here it is, you know. And I said, all you have to tell them is what Jesus has done for you. People love stories. They want to hear your story. What has he done for you? What has he changed in your life? And if you're sitting there right now going, I don't know, you need to dig. You need to pray about that. God, what's the message? What story have you given me to tell those around me? My cousin and I both, you know, it's like CrossFit. If you do CrossFit, you got to tell everybody you do CrossFit. And if you have a podcast, you got to tell everybody you have a podcast. And Ben and I have a podcast, and he's a personal counselor, and I'm his guinea pig, right? I have all these great ideas about mental health, and I kind of go, hey, well, not really. That's not really how that works. So I get corrected a lot so that you don't have to. Right? I like to ask the questions that maybe you don't get the opportunity to do that. And it's wonderful. We interview people who've been through traumatic events and they go, hey, this is how God brought me through this. And for those of you that talk about, you know, I know nobody here is talking about my eloquence, but like our catchphrase is we want to show where God showed up and showed out. And every English teacher in here is like, ugh, that's not a great phrase. But that's what we talk about. We want to drag the hard parts of our lives into the light so that Jesus can work in them and have his most impact. It's called confession, folks, and it's powerful, and we shouldn't be afraid of it. The easiest thing for a Christian to do should be this: oh Lord, I blew it. I messed up. I did not hit the mark there. It's like the bedrock of Christianity is we're all here to say, I need help. And the only one who can help me is Jesus and those who are his hands and feet. All right, I told you we're going to get the text. Let's get in the text. Matthew chapter 16, verse 24 through 26. In the headline of my Bible, I've been reading from the New American Standard all week, is the discipleship is costly. Then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in the glory of his Father with his angels and will then repay every man according to his deeds. And so in that short little passage, boy, Jesus packs a punch. I want you to remember at this time, the cross had not been redeemed yet, right? Like today, we walk around, we got the cross on t-shirts and on necklaces, on bracelets and everything because it's the hope. It represents the hope that we have. But at this moment in time, when Jesus says, pick up your cross and carry it, there has not been such an act yet. When you carried the cross, you were the scum of the earth. And you were treated like that. When you carried a cross, there was no question of your guilt. You were guilty, and you deserve everything that you're getting and worse. And here Jesus says, you got to carry that thing. You got to be willing to be treated worse than you can treat a dog in Bridgeport, Alabama today for the name of Jesus. That's more than your comfort zone. That's more than your money, and money is great. It takes money to do things. But it is a continual, in every moment, putting aside what I want right now for the betterment of those around you. They were going to give up everything they had. And one of the most bolstering things that what Jesus did on the cross and the raising on the third day is that every one of these men, outside of course Judas, sacrificed life and their existence and certainly their comfort zone, the idea of John, to do just that. Not one of them broke. Not one of them. And you can look it up. They died in terrible, awful circumstances. And not one of them ever recanted the gospel of Jesus Christ when it would have been really easy to go, hey, it's not worth it. It's not worth dying like that. Every one of them. And so that's a huge thing to us, right? We go to John chapter 15 and verse 13. And John, as I mentioned, a very personal, individual time. There's three chapters here, I believe. It may actually be longer. This is in the same discourse as John 14 when Jesus is trying to comfort them, saying, I've got to go. But you're going to follow me. I go to prepare a place for you so that I can come again and take you to be with me. Now notice in Matthew it says, if you come after me. Right? Have you ever wanted something so bad it did not matter what it cost to get it? I don't know. I can't speak for you, right? You tell me I can't do something. I had a position coach in high school, and he was a defensive back. He'd actually played in the Super Bowl, and he looked at me one day and said, you're never going to play over here. You're wasting your time. And he meant it as trying to help me get more playing time, and I took it as, oh, yeah, well, now your life's going to be hard, right? Not his particularly because he wasn't practicing, but his other DBs, their life got hard. right? Because he told me I couldn't. And I said, all right, well, I'll show you, right? I'll do that, right? I'm stubborn. Vindictive, actually, is probably the better word. Not so much now, hopefully. But I was going to show him. And I was going to do whatever it took to show him he had made a mistake. He had definitely not judged me correctly. That doctor comes in and goes, hey, you got leukemia. And I mean, and these are almost literally his words. We're gonna hit you hard and hit you with everything we got. And when your liver gives out, we're gonna hit your lungs. And when your lungs give out, we're gonna hit your heart. And if you've done anything to damage those things, now is the time you need to tell me, right? And I told him, well, I've never drank, I've never smoked, I've never done recreational drugs. And they looked at me like I was a unicorn, right? And they're like, what? Those exist? I said, yeah, they do. And I'm one of them. And he's like, that's awesome, because that's how hard we're going to hit you. And he says, you're going to need to want to live really badly. I said, well, let's go. And then they came in and said, hey, we're going to basically pump rat poison directly into your heart. Now, it's going to be really watered down, and it's organic. I promise you, that was literally said, it's organic. And my thought was, well, so is snake venom, you know? But yeah, like, you gonna want to live. And so I had pictures of my kids everywhere, right? I want to live. That's what Jesus is telling his disciples above and beyond that, right? I had a lot of people who loved me, who sent me cards and prayed for me. And there are people still praying for me. Hey, we still pray for you all the time. Oh, thank you. Keep it going. And Jesus says, when the world is against you and hates you, you got to keep coming. And it's going to cost you. John chapter 15 and verse 13. We'll back up to verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. And so if you do the math equation there, right? I'm not a math guy either, but if you do the math equation, what is Jesus telling them? I am your friend. And there's nobody who loves you more than I do. And the reason I'm doing this, yes, it's great to get together tonight and sing God's praises and sit in these pews and hear from God's word. But what's he telling us? If you don't love each other, why bother? This is the command. This is what it's all about. In other places, he says, the law, as in the Torah, the first five books, all those things that we fall asleep in Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And he says, the prophets, all of those things hang on, do you love God enough to come after him with everything that you have? It's not a some kind of thing. It's an all the time kind of thing. And can you love your neighbor as yourself? And then the question is, who's your neighbor? Basically, Jesus responds with us, anyone that you interact with on a daily basis. I'm glad that our government passes laws to limit discrimination and, of course, racism as much as they can. But you know as well as I do, governments are usually really behind the popularity of most of the time. People come to a realization before those things happen, right? And sometimes it's a long time. Sometimes not. Don't get me wrong. My degree's in history, so I know. I feel like every time I teach history, I'm just recanting all the atrocities that we've done to one another for whatever reason we can come up with. And some, you know, most of them really dumb ones, not nearly justified. But the idea there is if we just love our neighbor, then the laws take care of themselves, do they not? Right? Like the person I see at Dollar General, if I can give them a smile rather than a scowl, that might go a long way. That might be just enough for that person to keep going. Who knows? We don't know. And that's why God comes along and goes, you don't know what's going on with that little sixth grade boy who can't seem to keep his hands to himself. And yes, you have to discipline him because he can't be touching everybody. And he's got to learn that lesson. But you also need to be soft to the reasons why. So as a church, are we asking the right questions? Because those make all the difference in the world, right? We can talk about teen pregnancy and why is that on the rise, you know, and that's a good question to ask. Why? Then the next question is, What can we do about it? We know that there's sin there involved somewhere. What can we do about it? What can Travis Creasy do about it? And then when he gets the ball rolling, somebody else might see what I'm doing and go, I could do that. I mean, I can stand up there and talk like a wild man for 25 minutes about Matthew and John. But I can change the oil in the car, you know. I don't know how to do that, by the way, if anybody wants to educate me. You know? It's the small things. It's thinking outside the box because we're thinking of what is the loving thing to do right here. What can I do to show the love of God? What can I use? Because we have a tremendous amount of freedom. Like some of these disciples from the first century, if they could get in a time machine and travel to 2024, the United States, they'd be shocked at the things that you can say and do and the freedoms you have. And we just go, yeah, that's great, but we kind of like it the way we like it, you know. And you know, we just like it the way we like it. And they might shake us and go, why aren't you using the things that you got? Oh, man, I wish we had those things. Or maybe they'd just be about kingdom business. Loving those that they come in contact every single day. I've been on mission trips. They're great. They're awesome. I love going on them. Going to Ohio this weekend with my cousin. We're doing our mental health workshop. It's going to be awesome. I love spending time with Ben. It's going to be great. And I hope that people are touched and changed. I really do. But I spend way more time in Fayetteville, Tennessee than I do in Ohio or Bridgeport, Alabama. And if the people that see me and interact with me every day don't see Jesus, even when I just blow it completely, I'm missing on a lot of opportunities. We can't wait for days like this to be about kingdom business. And so how are you going to lay down your life tonight, tomorrow, the next day? What can you do, something that's small, that's really anybody can do? And sometimes it just starts with my facial expression when I see someone. Today I'm going to smile. Today I'm going to smile. Today I'm going to smile. Right? It really is phenomenal. Every time I go and check my blood and my little picture pops up there from October 18, 2018, I got a smile on my face. Right? Who's at an oncologist and got a goofy big old grin on their face? Right? Nobody. And I think, look at that goofball, man. He doesn't even have a clue what he's in for today. But then I'm like, you know what? If you can smile on October 16, 2018, there's not a day on this planet that you can't smile. I'm not saying be positive just to be positive and a goofball that nobody ever takes serious whatsoever. Mourn when people mourn. Sometimes it's as easy as that. Just showing up. Giving of your time. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1, Paul tells us, right, a living sacrifice. Why do we get to be a living sacrifice? Because Jesus died so that we might live. All the fun things that we get to do that I look forward to and count down the days for, it's one of my favorite Instagram things, is it has a countdown. You're like, oh, it's 3 days till we go to Ohio. Can't wait to be totally tired on Sunday and get ready to go do school again, you know? It's just sometimes it never ends. It probably should. And rest some. And even the days that we count down to that we dread, did you know who's with us? Who said he'll never forsake us? No matter how sour our attitudes are. No matter how annoying we can be. And certainly I could have a PhD in being annoying. I'm sure you could all imagine by now. You've heard me enough. Jesus. With all your little intricacies and your quirks that people look at and go, that's weird. Why does he do that? Jesus is right there with us. But you see, for that to happen, you got to choose him. He chose you. That decision is done, passed, over with. He's at the right hand of God. The choice, him choosing you, is over. What holds you back, even for me who's been a Christian since I was 12 years old, are the days where I don't choose him. And it really can be that simple. Lord, I choose you today. In Matthew chapter 15, he makes a comment about the generation, and he says, you know, they say, you know, they honor me with their lips. And I can certainly tell you that there are times I've come to church and I've sang the songs and my heart was far from him. I was thinking about practice or, you know, the sermon, right? If you're preaching, that's probably what you're thinking about. Maybe that's not so bad. But I've been anywhere else but in that pew or that folding chair at Riverside, singing with all of my heart, right? So I get it. I know what it's like to honor him with my lips and my heart be way far away. I also know what it's like to fill him in my heart and just be honoring him with everything inside I got, and I don't even have the words. I know that's shocking, right? I don't have the words to say how good he's been to me. But inevitably, when I snap back and my heart begins to think about all the things he's done, all the things he's said, all the ways in which he's pulled me out of the darkness, man, my heart just beats fast. And sometimes I can't control it. And sometimes I say things and it's almost like I can't control it. And then everybody's like, what did he just say? And I'm like, I don't know, but it felt good to say it. I had to say something, that how good and awesome and great God is. And sometimes it's simply that. At the end of Matthew chapter 16 and going into chapter 17 is the Mount of Transfiguration. It says there in Matthew that it's 6 days later. And I want you to understand that's not coincidence. That number is there for on purpose. I'm not saying it's not a literal 6 days later, but there's also an aspect to it that it's not seven. And what he's trying to tell you is the countdown has begun and the crucifixion is coming. And so every once in a while you'll read in the Gospels and it'll say 6 days later, or 3 days. And what it's telling you is that time of Jesus' crucifixion is coming, which we should look at and mourn a good bit, but we should also rejoice because he is not in the tomb. He is living. He is at the right hand of God. And you know where he wants you to be? Someday, singing with all your heart, as much as you can possibly go, whatever that looks like, it's Jesus. And he sees so much value and purpose in you. Remember, it tells us before we ever knew what was right, and therefore before we ever did one good thing, he died for us while we were yet sinners. When we deserved the cross that he had nailed to him, that he was nailed to, before the crowns ever went on his head, he knew that's what he was going to do. And he had you on his mind. There's a passage where it says, for the joy that was set before him. I've always been jealous of people with the first name Joy. It wouldn't work for me, right? Because it must be nice to read that verse. Because it's true, right? For the joy. But I don't think it's a stretch, and maybe it is. You can correct me if it is. But I think if you slide your name into that, for Travis, set before him, he went to where? The cross. But the beauty of that is he's not in the tomb. Peter tells us in the great sermon on the day of Pentecost, inspired by the Holy Spirit, he says, David is still with us. His tomb's right over there. You can go see it. It's not literally over there, but I'm just pointing for Peter. And he said, but you know whose tomb's not here? Jesus. Jesus is at the right hand of God as your mediator right now. And so if you've been a Christian for 40 years, 50 years, you could tell me stories that would blow my mind of where God has showed up and showed out in your life as a Christian for that long. You need to recommit yourself today, just like I need to recommit myself. If you've never given your life to Jesus, why? Why? That's a great question to ask. Why? Well, so-and-so, he's a hypocrite. Well, yeah, he is. Welcome to the party, right? Being a hypocrite doesn't stop you from going to Walmart. There's a lot of hypocrites there. Why? Because there's human beings there. There's a lot of things I say right up here that I don't live out. Every time I get up and preach, I'm preaching to Travis Creasy. Because I can always love, most of the time, love a lot more. So whatever excuse you have, lay it down. Just put it down. Just lay it at the feet of the cross and go, God, here's my excuse. And all the things that I put before you, I don't want to do that anymore. Those things are way too heavy to carry. And give me my cross and help me to follow you faithfully. if there's a way we can assist you in doing that, and maybe, just maybe, it's cutting your grass or just a hug. Maybe you need a hug tonight. Let's do that. Can we do that? Let's do that. We want to encourage you as we stand and sing to commit yourself wherever you are today to Jesus Christ.